1, Town of Beloit versus County of Rock. And I show the following people arguing. 10 minutes for Attorney Quintana, is it? Sincata. 10 minutes for Eugene R. Dumas. 30 minutes for Mr. Forbeck. And 10 minutes for Mr. Sincata. Is that right, Rebut? Okay. All right. You may proceed, Mr. Sincata, representing the interveners, third-party plaintiffs, respondents, petitioners, Bill, Zyla, etc., and the Green Rock Audubon Society.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Joe Sincata, and I represent Ms. Zyla, Mr. Prothero, and the Green Rock Audubon Society. What my folks, what the petitioners are claiming here, is that the Town of Beloit has acted beyond its, beyond the scope of its lawful constitutional authority. And the way the cases describe it, they've acted for what is not a public purpose, beyond what that doctrine allows. What have they done? We need to clarify this. The town and the amicus briefs spend a fair amount of time characterizing what's happened as the sale of a piece of public property. Merely the sale. That's not what this is. This is the Town of Beloit hiring its engineer and saying, go out and take this public asset we have, this piece of property. Do the engineering and design work necessary to sell it off as a subdivision. That's the actions that it's expending tax dollars on, that its public officials are spending time on, and that we have claimed are beyond what is allowed by the public purpose. And to continue that, just to think about it in a little different way, the record in this case talks about the property and what's happened. It doesn't really in detail talk about the acquisition of it. But if we looked at the statute that the town, as a village, by the way, it has village powers, operates under 6134, that statute specifically requires that acquisition of a property be for a public purpose. It lists some, and then it says for other such public purposes. If, in this case, the town had acquired the property with the specific idea that they would either develop it into a residential subdivision or have someone else do that, it seems to me that that intent would be what we'd be measuring here against the public purpose doctrine. So the fact that they now have acquired it for whatever reason, perhaps it was acquired for a public purpose and now they no longer need it, it seems to me that their disposition of it as a sale is not properly describe what's going on. What they're doing and what we've described it as is essentially going to business as a development, as a developer.
How does this differ? Say, I was thinking of all the industrial parks from Washera County, even the little city of Latoma. Township has an industrial park, and that's done for development. Is it because it's commercial? I'm talking about enterprise rather than residential. Is that the
I think that has... That's part of it. I think that this leads into a point I wanted to make. What I'm asking the court to do is find that the town has acted beyond the line here of the public purpose doctrine. The industrial bonding law and the blighted area law, which is sort of akin to that, statutory programs that were set up by the legislature and that this court has reviewed under the same standard, they found that industrial development, which sometimes can be defined as commercial in some instances, as well as rehabilitating blighted areas, facilitating low-income housing.
But in their brief, I think Beloit particularly points out, we've done this in the past. We did this approximately 11 or 12 years ago, when we developed residential and commercial, and many, many, I would say, probably hundreds of towns and or villages and or cities have involved themselves in this type of development. Not necessarily exclusively residential, but it's been going on. So this is the line in the sand you want the court to
draw? Well, I think so. I think the residential character of this, this really is a private utility. It's a private purpose, residential home development. High-end residential home development, by the way. But the fact that it may have gone on in conjunction with other things in the past, I would suggest does not mean it's constitutional, certainly. And the fact that the legislature in this court has had to sort of exhaustively review these programs, which allow what I think at first blush are somewhat non-traditional activities by a public body, industrial development, blighted area redevelopment, suggests that the presumption is that this kind of thing is not necessarily on its face a public purpose. So the town has suggested it's happened in the past. That's fine. That doesn't justify it now. The residential character, pardon me.
Let me interrupt you if I might. Basically, the last time that this court looked at the public purpose doctrine was with the Brewer Stadium case. And there, one of the justifications was that this was, it was okay because it was protecting and enhancing the tax base. Is that not what's going on here? And is that not one of the justifications given by the town of Beloit? How do you distinguish the two?
Actually, I'm not sure if the stadium case dealt specifically tax base, but it did talk about economic development, tourism, employment during the construction.
And in that sense, enhancing the tax base.
That was a component. I think the court also spent time and made sure to analogize the stadium to a recreational project. The court specifically says the nature of the stadium is sufficiently public to justify it. So what impliedly is happening in the stadium case, I believe, is that the test I've suggested, and I think the cases indicate, is the public purpose test. I think the court was trying to adhere to that. They were trying to say not only that there's a need and it'll help economic growth, but that the function that the public body is carrying out, the object, is public in nature. I think that that's required here, and we have to look at what the town has suggested is the objective. They've said tax base. I think it's tax base. What tax base is commercial or real estate development? I mean, really. Is real estate development of a character, of a public character? This court's key decision in Department of Development versus State Building Commission dealt with the internal improvements clause, and it dealt with the state, more the sort of higher up, the state giving loans to private real estate developers to low and moderate income households to help facilitate that. And the court said that this was an internal improvement the state could not engage in. The point here is that that test that the court applies for internal improvement is the same two-pronged test that the court applies, and we argue should continue to apply, to determine whether any governmental entity is operating for a public purpose. So the nature of the stadium is more public, certainly, I think, in a reasonable view, than a town deciding to develop a high-end residential subdivision.
No, is your objection that it's a residential subdivision? If this was, as Justice Wilcox was asking you previously, if this was a corporate park or an industrial park or a research center or something of that nature, you wouldn't have the same objection.
I think that it would be acceptable under the statutes in certain instances, certainly for industrial purposes. And the reason is because, as the court articulated, and the key case I think cited is the LaPlante versus, or Hammermill versus LaPlante case, that a public body of city can assist and subsidize an office park or more industrial park. I think the definition's been stretched to include some commercial activities. But the very nature of that case was limiting. And so I do think that industrial is different than residential, certainly. And the benefits of industrial, as well as the cure or the harm, the public harm that the LaPlante case addressed and that the legislature addressed with the industrial bonding law, was the fleeing of employment flight and job flight, something that in the legislature's mind rose to a level of a public harm and needed to be addressed with what was someone in an extraordinary remedy, letting the public get involved with public subsidy. So
what if this were apartment complexes instead of individual residences?
I think it would be, if it's low income, I think that's considered to be sort of a public good, providing that kind of housing where it may not be provided otherwise. So that, in that case...
Once you get above a certain number of units, aren't those commercial properties?
Oh, I would think they would be, yeah. I don't think they would be allowed. I think that if you could characterize it as commercial, I think it's not something that the town or the public body should get involved in because it doesn't have this curative element to it, this remedying of a public harm.
The tax rate is exactly the same, whether it's industrial property or commercial property or residential property.
It is?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure that that's always the case, but if it is, I'm not sure what I should be taking from that. I thought that the commercial property often is, you sort of get more bang for your buck with that, don't you, in the industrial property?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's the uniformity clause. The rate is the same. Not necessarily agricultural land, swamp, but residential, commercial, manufacturing, it's the same rate.
Council, just okay. Question. Just the town also makes the argument that basically part of this is for the preserving of an environmentally sensitive area. So there are mixed purposes or mixed use here. You have residential rather than having it all being preserved. So you. Does that change the character?
I think if that was what was happening, it would. They're not doing that. They're not doing anything to preserve. I mean, that's not their purpose. Their purpose was initially to develop a 36-lot subdivision and not preserve any of it for the public. The county then got in and said, no, scale this back, put a 300-foot public easement in place to try to protect not only this property, but the DNR property to the south, which is considered by the DNR to be sort of environmentally valuable. So that exactly is the type of thing that a public body should do, not just sort of naked real estate development.
Thank you, Councilor.
Thank you.
Your time is up. You have another 10 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. Dumas?
May it please the court, my name is Eugene Dumont. I am here on behalf of the respondent, Coney of Rock. Rock Coney wants to emphasize that in this case, there is not any party that is challenging the constitutionality of any specific statute. Coney does challenge the constitutionality of the course of conduct that has been engaged in by the town of Beloit. The public purpose doctrine, which has been discussed at length in all of the parties' briefs and by the questions which have been raised by the justices, it's clear, is well known to the members of this court. does establish that the nature of the public purpose doctrine is that of a basic constitutional tenet. And I think it's necessary to emphasize that specifically because of the lengths to which the town of Beloit has resorted to arguments to establish that under their reading of the statutes providing for the adoption of village powers and the powers that are available to villages generally, that there is somehow no concern about the public purpose to be served by the sale of property previously held by a municipality.
Could I ask you?
Sure.
You've spoken of a basic constitutional tenet. What is the source in the Constitution of the public purpose doctrine?
Your Honor, I do believe that the court in both the Bowman versus Barsack decision, which refers to the Heimel versus Ozaki-Coney decision, is in that Ozaki-Coney decision at length talks about the origin of the public purpose doctrine in Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution. And I believe that the nature of that doctrine goes to the function of a judiciary in making sure in a flexible and ongoing manner that statutes, even if on their face appear to be proper, are not allowed to be applied in a way so as to result in improper uses of public funds and public power for the benefit of a few, that the tie-in with Article 4, Section 4 is that it is the essence of a republican form of government, that government serves all and not a privileged few, and that the operation of government is open and accountable to all. I believe that what the record here shows is that, in fact, the town of Beloit has taken liberties with a number of statutes which have been enacted by the legislature to attempt to provide means for local governments to deal with the myriad and changing problems that confront us in our society, that while the town has attempted to make this seem as though it's actually a battle over the appropriateness and the legitimacy of those legislative grants of power. In point of fact, what we differ with is what it is that the town of Beloit has actually done under color of those various statutes.
I go back to a question that Justice Wilcox asked, and that is the difference between this development project and an industrial park. I note that Rock County has a website, and on the Rock County Planning, Economic, and Community Development Agency portion of that website, you are right now advertising Beloit Industrial Site number 11, which is owned by the town of Beloit. What's the difference between that developing it for an industrial property and developing it for a residential property?
I don't believe that there's an absolute black-white line that separates the two. I do think that it is significant that there are specific statutory grants of authority for municipalities and counties to engage in certain activities for the purposes of industrial development, for the purposes of combating blighted areas, for the purposes of providing housing to specifically identified populations. I think that the jurisprudence of this state makes it clear that the court approaches the application of the public purpose doctrine in a flexible manner. We have conceded in our brief that if, in fact, the purpose and reason that a municipality acquired a block of real estate was for a clearly public and appropriate reason, and to safeguard the fiscal welfare of the municipality, determined that it was necessary to divest itself of that property, you may have an ultimate circumstance that would be somewhat similar to what the town of Beloit represents itself as doing. I think that the analysis that's called for under the public purpose doctrine would require an examination in terms of, one, you know, was there in fact any legislatively approved purpose which was consistent with the common law on the nature of a public purpose that justified what it was that the town was trying to do to begin with. Judge Johnston very specifically and I think very accurately noted that this isn't an instance where we're just talking about the town of Beloit in the most reasonable way for the economic welfare of its residents to divest itself of an asset. What is involved here is a course of conduct. If the town of Beloit, as has been approved by the Court of Appeals in its decision in this case, can take it upon itself to enter into the enterprise of developing riverfront high-end real estate for private residences, what business can they not undertake then if the profit appears to be great enough? There's an additional concern that I think is important to mention by way of public policy. In the record, it is noted that the town of Beloit has expended over $600,000 in sanitary improvements along Walters Road.
That leads me to what my question. What exactly are you objecting to? That they bought the property? That they attempted to, or did a plat it and looked for county approval? That they spent $600,000 to put in the necessary was street, sewers, whatever, for platting and selling, or that they're selling the property piecemeal? Right. Which part of it? Is it all of the above, some of the above?
It is all of the above, and one of the difficulties that the County of Rock has had has been that we do feel that our primary obligation in dealing with the town of Beloit under Chapter 236 is to attempt to be cooperative and mutually supportive and to work together in a manner that does reflect compromise and flexibility towards a rational land use pattern.
Except that your client approved a plat, albeit a scaled-back development plat, that you're now arguing is unconstitutional.
And these questions go to what I think is the perniciousness of what has been set in motion by the inappropriate nature of what the town of Beloit is doing. Under the Silver Lake Sanitary District versus Department of Natural Resources decision, we concluded that it was not within the province of the county in reviewing an application by the town under Chapter 236 to attempt to impose any of our views or to exercise jurisdiction over any matter that did not come within the purview of Chapter 236. With the type of conditions which the Planning and Development Committee of the Rock County Board of Supervisors fashioned after a number of hearings with representatives of the town board, the interveners, and other members of the public not aligned with any of those specific groups, the county felt that the objectives of Chapter 236 and the county's responsibilities were adequately discharged.
Well, the county could have rejected this on grounds of unconstitutionality.
Not for anything that was identified in 236.45 as one of the standards that we were to use in deciding whether to approve or deny. So we were put in a conundrum where we would either have to disregard the limitation of our role under 236 or stand to be accused of having approved matters that, in fact, were not addressed in that form. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dumas. Mr. Forbeck, representing the town of Beloit.
May it please the court, my name is Kenneth Forbeck and I represent the town of Beloit. We're here in the Supreme Court to talk about this particular case and what the town of Beloit has attempted to do with regard to this property. First of all, I think we should probably clear up a couple of things just so the court is aware of it and understands a little bit historically about this piece of property. This piece of property and a large, much larger portion of property was bought back in 1961 from a farmer. The town of Beloit, it was long before my time representing the town of Beloit. The town of Beloit kept the property and kept it as industrial property for a long period of time.
Before you proceed with the chronology, what were the circumstances of that purchase? Was it a condemnation?
It wasn't a condemnation. I think it was a straight sale, candidly. I don't think the town of Beloit's ever done a condemnation, to the best of my knowledge.
For what purpose?
It was 61, and I honestly don't know, and I don't have anybody that can tell me historically why it was. I have a feeling what happened was is they had monies available, because at that point they had a power plant in their area, and they had the ability, they had an excess cash, and I think what they were doing is planning for future development somewhere along the way. That's the only thing I can hypothecate from it.
Future development of what sort?
Just having the land available for if somebody came in and wanted to do something, whether they wanted to build an industrial park or whether they wanted to do something else. That's hypothecation on my part. I can't tell you for sure.
There's no record support for anything.
There's no record one way or the other. What the town of Beloit had is they had this property zoned industrial for a long period of time. And then in 1980, they sold it to Caterpillar Tractor on an option. The concept there basically was Caterpillar said that they were going to put in an industrial facility in there. Caterpillar they exercised the option, had the property, but they never did anything. And under the agreements that the town of Beloit had with them, eventually the town repurchased the property for the original sales price minus 15%. So the town of Beloit reacquired the property in 1990. When they reacquired the property in 1990, it was still zoned industrial. The town of Beloit in 1995 did their first master plan. They had never had a master plan before. And the town of Beloit and the town board at that time made a conscious decision that what they would do would be not to look to do any development industrially and compete with the cities of Beloit and the cities of Janesville. What they would do is that they would have a bedroom community or a residential community. So they made that choice. This property was then offered for sale to a variety of people for residential development. No one came forward to do any residential development. Eventually, the DNR expressed some interest in the property, and this is a part of a much larger property. It's actually along the river, about 60 acres. 35 of those acres were eventually sold to the DNR and is now a state park in the area. This is the north 20 acres of that larger piece of property. So that historically is where we were as far as the property goes.
I need the analysis. I think we start, at least according to case law, with Article 4, Section 4, as the basis of the public purpose doctrine, which forbids the expenditure by the government for anything but a public purpose. Do you agree with that?
I think that's an appropriate conclusion.
And I may be speaking a bit generally, but generally you agree with that. Then the next thing I think you have to do is say, okay, then how do you define public purpose? And it appears at least some cases come up with a two-prong test.
The Hammermill case, I think, is the leading case in that particular instance.
Now, is, again, it may be worded differently, but it's essentially the two-prong test. First, that the subject matter or commodity must be one of public necessity, convenience, or welfare. And second, is the difficulty which individuals have in providing it for themselves. Is that essentially the two-prong
test? That's what the two-prong test is. I don't know whether I agree with the two-prong test, because I think the two-prong test has been changed over the years. And in fact, I think that's what we're looking at when you're looking at public purpose, as to how do you define public purpose. And I think that's why we're probably here today, is to define that. The two-pronged test was one of the things enunciated in case law. There's also a variety of different tests, and the variety of different tests are with the Miller Park case, a couple of cases that just came down from the Court of Appeals that had to do with the refunding of the $10,000 fee for liquor licenses by a community, and why they could do that. Was that done for public purpose? There was a variety of cases.
The second part of the test that I read from the Barzak and Heimerl and
I understand
cases, Dumont cases, focus in on the difficulty that individuals would have providing it for themselves. I think that gets into the whole issue of whether or not government can compete with private industry. If the private enterprise can do it, then you let the private companies do it. But if it's not something that can be provided but for government intervention, then the government does it. Low-income housing is an example.
That's specifically provided by a statute. I agree with the justice that's a statutory, low-income housing is a statutory effect here. What we're talking about here, frankly, is we're talking about a sale of property. Had the town of Beloit sold this piece of real estate as 24 individual parcels, they have a perfect right to do that. The question then becomes, when we're talking about public expenditures, and then you get into the powers concept, is did they have a right to put in infrastructure to sell those pieces of property? And they do have a statutory right to put in infrastructure. And in fact, I have to point out to the court, and I don't want to disillusion the court, because I think what happens is we get confused with this. The town of Beloit put a separate sewer line, if you think of it as one long line, next to this piece of property. And that line was put in for the purpose of hopefully developing that side of the river. This is along a river, and that side of the river has not been developed at all. It happens to be right next to their sewer plant. So when they made the decision that they were going to be residential in nature, they were looking for ways to develop that area. They did, in fact, have several people that came to them, and I was only privy to a couple of those different proposals that attempted to buy this property for development, and none of them were very good proposals to do anything.
I'll tell you what bothers me is this. I live in Wausau, and you have Rib Mountain, and it's surrounded by lots of hills, and there are lots of private developers selling off tops of those hills that surround Rib Mountain because it's prime real estate, because you get a view of Rib Mountain. It's
okay.
High-end housing. Well, let's say the town of Rib Mountain owns the top of Rib Mountain. And wow, you know, if you think getting a view of Rib Mountain is high-end real estate, living on top of Rib Mountain and getting a view of everyone looking at you is even higher. So the town of Rib Mountain decides to put in some sewers, gutters, and develop that, because they're going to make a mint doing it. And of course, all the more money they make is going to enhance the public coffers, so it's a public purpose. Is that okay?
You've made kind of the argument yourself, in that you're saying what happens is when they sell that property, they may make some money on it, and therefore that helps the coffers. It also helps development. It helps the tax base within the community. They could have, and that's what the town of Beloit could have done here, is turned around and sold the top of Rib Mountain to a developer and let the developer put in the infrastructure. What commonly happens, and it happens in the town of Beloit and just about every community across the state, is you enter into a developer's agreement wherein municipalities will put in the infrastructure and then specially assess back on those pieces of property and then eventually recoup their investment. The town of Beloit did here is akin to what I just described.
Well, why isn't that competing with the private developers in Wausau? I mean, a lot of the most beautiful land in this state is owned by governmental entities along the lakes, along shorelines, on top of the hills. Boy, especially when times are tight, why don't they cash in and develop that now?
Just, well, so the justice understands it, this piece of property that we're talking about is 20 acres. The portion that is along the river has always been in a conservancy area. It's a C1 area for the town of Beloit.
Environmentally sensitive.
They were going to take care of it. I mean, if you go to the west of that, which is the rest of the acreage, let's say that was 3 acres, the rest of the acreage is an old farm. And frankly, it's junk farm. I mean, it's just a piece of property that sits out there that was farmed with the town of Beloit bought it from Duggan, which was a farmer at that time, and they farmed this place. Now, that's what the property looked like. I understand what you're talking about the beauty and the sensitivity to beauty. The town of Beloit, in doing or agreeing to do what they called an environmental corridor in that area, where it was agreeing to try to preserve that area for people. But again, we get back to just what I was talking about with the sale of this property. If they decided to make this 24 strips of property out there, they could sell 24 strips of property. I don't think anybody would complain about that at all, because I don't think that's illegal, improper, or anything else. It doesn't, and as far as public purpose doctrine, you're simply selling extra property that you have.
What was unacceptable about the private development proposals that were submitted?
I hate to tell you, but it's been a few years now on this thing. And what was unacceptable is, I think, basically the way they wanted to develop it and how they wanted to do it and who they wanted to have pay for things. That's all. I only looked at one, and maybe I glanced at another one.
Is this in the record?
Pardon?
Is this
the it's not a part of the record, and that's the reason I didn't. I didn't want to bring it up for, totally, because what had happened was is that that was a decision. If I can explain briefly the town of Beloit's history. The town of Beloit had a piece of property on the east side of their community. And they originally, back in, I'd say, the mid-70s, created an industrial park with a provision for multiple family housing in the front of that. The economy went south. They weren't able to do anything with it. So it sat there for 15 years. They had put the infrastructure in it. The town of Beloit had put the infrastructure in that. Someone came along with an idea and said, why don't we make that into residential property? We'll have to reconfigure the lots and do everything else. It was 80-plus lots, and they sold those out in, I think, a year and a half. So there was a need. The additional tangential thing that happened was that there were a lot of other private developers that then built a lot of other things around that, namely multiple family housing, single family homes, etc. It spurred development in that area. This particular situation is, again, you have to understand the west side of the town of Beloit. The west side of the town of Beloit just has no development out in this area. In fact, it's about a mile and a half from their power plant. They think they can sell these lots. There has been interest since the town of Beloit announced that they were going to do the subdivision in property that's next to it that the town of Beloit happens to own. And so the basic concept that I'm trying to get across to the court is one of the public purposes is to help a community develop. And one of the things that the township was successful on the east side, in which most of the board members had a history of, is realizing that when they did the development on the east side, it spurred additional development, and the houses sold right away. And that's what they're talking about on this side of town.
If I could refocus us on the legal question that's presented here in the public purpose doctrine, is there any distinction between the public purpose doctrine as a constitutional doctrine and the public use requirement in the takings law?
The public use requirements and what now?
In takings law under the Fifth Amendment and its state counterpart.
There's no takings here that I know of, and I can't be candid with you.
There's a distinction between the two constitutional principles.
I know the public takings law was cited by other counsel, and candidly, I think it's a completely different set of laws and set of rules. There's no taking being done here.
I understand there's no taking being done here, but I'm asking you if there's any distinction, any principle distinction between the two constitutional doctrines.
I don't know. I can't honestly answer that.
Well, let me ask it this way. Perhaps this will spark something. Would the public purposes that you're asserting sustain the town's action in this case be sufficient to sustain a condemnation, eminent domain taking of this property if it were privately held?
I don't think so, to answer your question.
Okay.
I don't think
the town could not force a sale on a private property owner based upon these public
justifications. I've done municipal law for 30-some years. I'm not a proponent of doing eminent domain, first of all, number one. But number two is I don't think that you can show an eminent domain necessity to do this particular piece of property.
So why is it any different here?
Excuse me?
Why is it any different here?
Because why is what any different?
But don't these principles spring from the same understandings, constitutional?
The thing I guess I would say to you is this. Number one, they had a right to sell property. Number two, they have statutory rights to do both of these things. That's what they did.
Sure, I understand.
Okay.
If they wanted to just sell this property outright to a developer, fine. But that's not what they're doing. They're acting as the private real estate developer.
They're doing this, and again, I can only tell you what the record shows and what my experience has shown with the municipality. municipality found no one that could do this, and they wanted to get something done on that side of the community, and that's how they did it.
Well, it's not that there was no one available, as I understand the record. There were several developers that were interested, and their proposals were rejected for reasons that are unexplained in the record. So we don't have a pure infeasibility of private performance of this.
I would have to agree with you.
Okay.
We don't have.
When we evaluate that part of the test, do we look at it specifically with respect to what's going on in this case, or do we look at it more generally? In other words, is this one of those...
I think you have to look at this more generally, and I think you also have to look at what's happening with regard to the public purpose doctrine within the state of Wisconsin. As you're aware, as the law provides, the public purpose doctrine is a very static concept in the state of Wisconsin. It moves. It moves all of the time, and it shifts all of the time. I'm sorry.
Fluid, then, not static.
Fluid, excuse me. My poor choice of words. Okay. But it's moving all of the time. It is moving all of the time. Communities are basically doing what the town of Beloit chose to do in this particular instance throughout the state. And what I can indicate to you is that the town of Beloit didn't do this lightly, I guess. What I would say to you is that they wanted to get some development going on that side of the community.
And I understand, but we don't look at those kinds of subjective motivations sitting as a court. We have to evaluate it.
I understand
legally,
that.
Not substitute our public policy judgment for the legislative body, but looking at it in a general way, you're right, the doctrine is very fluid and it's constantly moving and the edges are constantly being pushed, and some could argue to the extent where it really doesn't mean anything anymore. And I think what the import of this case is, or potentially will be, is to say whether or not this doctrine means anything anymore. And that's why I'm asking the question about whether it has any connection theoretically to the public use requirement under takings law, because I agree with you. I don't think this stated public purpose would be sufficient under the takings clause to justify a forced sale, condemnation, action.
Well, we both agree on that. We may disagree on other things, but we do agree on that.
Right, so why would we say it has sufficiency here?
Well, I can only tell you historically what happened and what the determinations were made by a legislative body. And I think you have to defer to the determinations made by that legislative body that's in that community and deals with things all of the time in that community. And that's the determinations that they made. And I think that those determinations, with the reasons given, are sufficient to satisfy the public purpose doctrine.
Let me...
So the point that we did, I think, just to follow up on Justice Sykes, if I'm looking historically, you indicated that some developers came, but they didn't meet the concerns of the board at that time. And I'm just saying, well, if someone had come, say, the Nature Conservancy for et cetera, and said, well, we just want it to stay like it is, I believe, and I may be wrong, but it seems to me that the board had the power to say, no, that's not in our grand design or our master plan. So we're not just following up.
Right.
And part of your brief talks about when you're sensitive to the environmental concerns here, you've already done something, but basically, the balance of the property, you've made a decision that we want either, quote, industrial or residential or something. We want people there rather than no people. Is that...
Well, that is the truth. The question is, who has the right to make that decision?
I
think the legislative body, in their debates, in their public debates, make those decisions. Everything that we're talking about Rib Mountain, and we're talking about the areas around there that are being developed. Somebody made a decision to do that. And legislatures make decisions all of the time. And I would simply tell the court that I think it behooves all of us. We may not like the decision that that some legislatures may make, but we are bound by those and we follow those. And if there is in fact a public purpose here, then I think that you're bound to follow whatever they did. You may not like it, you may not approve of it, but that's one of the things that you do.
Well, I do like private housing, and I do approve of it. But my question to you is, what can you think of anything that the town could do that would not fit under a public purpose, the way you have defined public purpose? Any kind of development, any kind of expenditure of funds will help the community, will sooner or later raise the tax base and bring in tax money. And there's no limit to that. I mean, here you have, in effect, an indirect and remote advantage, because instantly there isn't an increase in the tax base. You put in $600,000, you don't get a payoff until everything is sold. So it's remote and indirect, and those are standards, right? And the end here was not fixing up the, improving this property. The end was ultimately selling it. So everything is removed. Give me an example of something the town could not do.
As far as public expenditures go?
Yeah.
Well, I think they're bound by and they're limited by the statutes with regard to what were they're doing.
Let's just talk about the statutes for a minute.
Okay.
Suppose the statute said the town can go into being a land developer and subdividing and making money, or going into the supermarket business.
Well, I think you've answered your question. I don't think the town has a right to go into supermarket.
Well, but suppose the statute said that.
Then I think that's a legislative decision.
No. Well, then how can the statute override the Constitution? If public purpose is a constitutional doctrine, the fact that the statute says you can buy and sell real estate means only you can buy and sell real estate within the public purpose doctrine.
And I understand that, and I agree. I don't think the legislature would go to that extreme where they would say you can do a carnival. We have Miller Park, that's all I can tell you. Okay. So and that's the best I can do. But to answer your
question, my case rests.
To answer your question about what a municipality can or can't do, municipalities are basically run by the people that are elected to run them. And that's really at the consent of the people. And the consent of the people hiring those people, basically, by electing them, make the decision about how they want to focus on things. If every community said we can't do it until something happens out there, it may not happen. The town of Beloit and in this community and their current board made a decision. $1,000 for that future development. It's like anybody that does an industrial park or does a park that's a combination of industrial park and residential area. They're betting on the come, basically, is what they're doing. They're betting that eventually something's going to get there.
You know what, though? I'm elected, too.
Pardon?
I'm also elected, as are my colleagues on the bench.
And
we're elected and sworn to uphold the Constitution and laws of the state of Wisconsin, and that includes the public purpose doctrine. And as I listen to your argument, it sounds pretty much like you're arguing for some form of abstention, almost, that the court has no role to play in determining whether a public purpose exists, and I don't think that's right.
I don't agree with you. No, I'm not arguing that I'm not arguing that you should not review these things. That's the reason we're here today.
Well, you're arguing a level of deference which is tantamount to abstention. You're saying once the legislature decides whether that's the state legislature in passing a statute or the town board in developing a plat and getting it approved, once it does that, then we have to, you know, just defer to that judgment almost to the extent of abdicating our responsibility.
You have to look at the reasons why they did that. Okay?
Right.
And the concept that they basically had was to spur growth, to get economic development on that side of the community, to help them with their tax base, and also at the same time they were preserving this environmental corridor that happens to be there. That's what they did. I mean, those are the reasons, and those are the public purposes that you would be looking for as a court to make that determination as to whether or not they fell within the ambit of public purpose doctrine.
So is there any stronger argument, just to reverse it and say that, let's say it was originally industrial development, they bought the land hypothetically, well, we know they bought it 6 months, but now they're going to make it all a park for the preservation of wildlife. Now that's a public purpose. No one would argue that, right?
No one would argue about that, and I guess what I would say to you is that that's the subject of the legislators making that decision. Those people that are elected make those decisions.
Okay.
And again, what I indicated before, sometimes we agree, sometimes we don't agree, but that's why they are basically elected by those people to make those decisions.
The interveners here make the argument that allowing the town of Beloit to engage in this for-profit land development enterprise compromises the town's role as steward of its public lands and creates perverse incentives for the town to go easy on itself with regard to applicable environmental regulations. The county of Rock makes the same kind of argument. It says there's an incompatibility of offices. How can the town of Beloit, the argument is, serve its function as a regulatory entity, being steward of the steward of its public lands, and at the same time be a for-profit developer of those same lands? It seems to me there is incompatibility of positions. Could you respond to that?
Well, with regard to the property and its development, first of all, we're elevating this piece of property or any piece of property. The town has, I think, $1,400,000 worth of property that they've acquired over the years. It's all over the community. I don't, when you're talking about stewards, that elevates it to sounding as though it's a pristine piece of property. It is, in fact, not.
But our law, in the case, the rule of this case, will arguably cover the property, whether or not it's pristine or not pristine.
Okay.
But I'm talking really, my concern isn't with the individual demographics or characteristic of this property, but rather the rule of law.
The rule of law would say, number one, the township has a right to sell property that they own, regardless of where it's located and how it's located. They make a decision about whether or not to sell that property, and the requirement of law is that they receive fair market value for that property. Beyond that, as far as what them being the ultimate reviewer of or a reviewer of what they did in this particular instance, this went in a kangaroo and came out a pig as far as that goes. I mean, there were a million different changes that took place with regard to this. The reason that we have the laws that we have is that we have a subdivision law. We have it reviewed by the county. We had it reviewed by the city of Beloit. We had it reviewed by their own planning commission. We had it reviewed by the state of Wisconsin.
You see that there is, from your point of view, there is no conflict or compromise of the regulatory role when they engage in...
If, in fact, they could make their own decisions and didn't have to go to anybody else, then I'd say, yeah, you probably do have. And I think it's a good argument to say you do have that. That's not what happens with this kind of a particular entity or what happens with this piece of property. I mean, the realities of life are is that it has to go to a lot of other bodies for comment and review. And that's what happened in this case. And a variety of things were changed as a result of that. If you're saying, with regard to what they did here, that if they were the only persons to make the decisions, could they compromise on that property environmentally or be very easy on themselves as far as the size of the property and violating their zoning ordinances, then I'd say yeah, but I think they're still bound by their ordinances, laws that they have, which are their zoning ordinances and laws. They're bound by the subdivision law that exists, and they went through a variety of review processes here. So I don't, to answer your question, I can understand the thought process, but I don't think there was any conflict here because of the varieties of reviews and the fact that they're bound by law.
So let me just push it one point further. So it seems you're saying that it's okay if there's a conflict and even if they go easy on themselves because there's a check and balance later on. And that's problematic. I mean, just because the end result is that someone else shores you up doesn't condone your conduct. So you got to explain to me why there's no conflict or compromise in roles by being both the regulatory authority and the private and the for-profit enterprise asking or applying for the permits.
I think you go through that checks and balances process. That's basically what I'm telling you. I'm not telling you anything beyond that. You are bound by a subdivision ordinance, by a zoning ordinance, and you're bound to take a look at all of those things. In this particular case, the town of Beloit, there's been no objection by anyone before this court. Or frankly, could there be that the town of Beloit somehow went easy on themselves with regard to this piece of property? In fact, where the underlying litigation involved in this matter has to do with the fact that we think that the county overstepped their bounds in what they can do as far as regulation goes. That's why we initially started the action, and that's why we're here.
When they sell these lots,
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
I'm just hypothecating. When they sell these lots, I assume the town isn't going to sell them themselves. Will they be, they'll go through a broker and they'll probably be advertising as environmentally sensitive next to a...
I'm just looking
ahead, but I'm just saying questions have been raised about the difference. And do you see a difference between this and an industrial park?
I don't. I can, because the town of Beloit had an industrial park and did the same thing.
Well, we did.
And in this particular instance, on their side, on the east side, when they did this, they hired a broker, basically retained a broker to sell those lots on that side of the township. I anticipate that's what they would do here.
But Justice Brossett, did you have a question?
Justice Wilcox asked me.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Sincotta.
Thank you. Fortunately, a number of the justices have brought up some of the points that I had hoped to make in my initial presentation, but let me just get right to that. This case is really more about the future and about what public bodies can do, and Justice Sykes, I think you're absolutely right. This is not a public purpose or public use, which would justify a taking. I cannot determine a distinction between the two doctrines. I think the case of David Jeffrey Company versus City of Milwaukee conflated them, put them together. I think it needed to do that to uphold the blighted area law. So it is our view, and this is not a takings context, but it is our view that my petitioners, my folks live just west, and they have town property. It's big acreage. It's not that valuable. There's nothing to prevent, after this is built out, them taking our property. I don't see how the Court of Appeals opinion cannot be used to justify that. And that's, we think, potentially
taking
dangerous
under what precedent. What would be the theory? The eminent same domain, what would be the taking what would be your theory?
Well, there's a lot of acreage. There's a rural property. It's the tax base. The value of the property is low. We want to increase it, so we're going to take it, split it up, make it into two high-end homes.
Has there ever
increase
been
the tax base. That's what they're doing here.
Has there ever been such a case that you know of?
Well, there's not been a specific case that I know of here, but there is the case in Illinois, which I cited to you, dealing with the Southwestern Illinois Development Authority taking someone's private property so they could enhance another company's development.
Okay, what's the difference, I asked opposing counsel, between this and an industrial park?
The difference?
Yeah.
It's the difference. This is the hard thing. The two-prong test deals with dealing with the nature of the objective of the public body. And the difference is the drawing of the line. In the industrial development context, the legislature determined that in limited instances, with procedures to protect, and by the way, to not seek profit, the public bodies could do industrial developments. But that was the extent of it. So the difference is, I think, one of a sense of people thinking about it saying, yeah, that's kind of odd. The county director, Mr. Blaskowski, puts an affidavit in there in the record. He says he's never heard of this before. So the standard for the public purpose deals with the traditional functions of the government. That's the best sort of standard that is out there, and it's difficult, and it's described by this court as a burden. Deciding where this line is drawn, that residential is different than industrial, is considered a burden by the court. We don't want to burden the court. We think this is way out. This is as far private as you can get. So I think that the answer to that is that it's just, in a reasonable mind, this is private. Industrial development has more of a larger aspect to it. There's many employees, perhaps, and there's the preservation of jobs. And the legislature thought that they were preventing the public harm of those jobs going away. That's the best I can do as far as the distinction.
What about the situation in which the municipality will agree to provide the infrastructure for a private residential development? How is that distinguishable?
I think they can go ahead, if they really feel lucky, they can go ahead and spend that money. And that's probably a political question, that they blew it, it's a boondoggle, vote them out. But the objects that they're seeking there, they're putting in the sewer in hopes that they'll come, that's okay. That's the line they can go to. It's in the public roadway. They can't, as I've described in the brief, go beyond that and say, well, now we're going to do the development too. That's, I think, the distinction. The one is acting under the platting statutes, and it's seeking to subdivide property for sale. That's different than priming the pump with the sewer. Now, I think that it was somewhat foolhardy to go this far with this kind of expenditure. But we're not attacking that expenditure by itself. In combination, as considered an entire real estate development, we would be.
Yeah, well, they're priming the argument was made, priming the pump for development, that others, in fact, I think the council indicated that there were people buying around this already in anticipation of this being developed. Isn't that the same as priming the pump?
I'm not quite sure.
The argument was made that people are buying parcels of land around this development. In other words, in anticipation of its becoming a residential condition, residential development.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, talking about...
Actually, I don't think that's happened. I think that Alliant Energy owns a large parcel, the town owns most of it, and there's one individual homeowner on the river. So there's not... That hasn't occurred, and I'm not sure how it would affect that pump priming aspect. I think that's not the case here. Perhaps I'm not getting your question.
No, well, I thought the argument was made that somebody had already purchased the parcel next to this parcel. That's what I'm...
I know the DNR purchased the parcel to the south.
Then that was my error. Go ahead.
Okay. the takings context is public use / public purpose. It deals with individual property rights. The court needs to protect those. It can't be left to a city council. The court needs to at least review the nature of the use that is proposed by the body. This case is about tax dollars. Well, perhaps the impact on the individual is somewhat deferred, but really, as we've discussed, or tried to say, the origin of this doctrine really could be looked at as the takings clause. The government takes tax dollars to use it for public purposes. They also take real property to use it for public purposes. To respond and comment on Justice Bradley's comments, I think you're exactly right on the two elements that are a problem in this context. That is, the town finds itself with property or decides to use tax dollars for some purpose, and they say tax base will be increased. Well, yeah, you're going to be competing with the private developers, and they're going to be in conflict. Those are the two key things. Well, how do you prevent the conflict? Well, you can't let them seek profit or tax base because it's going to inherently make them in conflict. And the other point, why should we have a public purpose doctrine that prohibits the town or public bodies from getting into private development? I think the Heimerl case from this court quoted another case, and I want to give that quote. The object of the Constitution was to protect individuals in their rights to carry on the customary business of life, rather than to authorize the Commonwealth or the towns, parishes, precincts, and other bodies to undertake what had usually been left to private enterprise of individuals. So the court, by quoting that, I think is saying, in fact, what Justice Bradley is recognizing, don't let the public bodies compete, save those opportunities for profit for the private individuals, and let the public stay as the regulator.
As I understand your argument, you're not arguing that the town is prohibited by the public purpose doctrine from just selling this property for purposes of development. You're arguing that the town is prohibited from actually developing it itself and spending tax money to do that.
That's right.
You might have a statutory argument to make if the town were to just sell the property to a developer, but you're not making that argument here.
No, I'm not. I think that the sale issue is not the issue. It's not being sold like this. The council for the town just talks about 24 strips. They can't get there from here. It's one parcel. To get it to 24 strips, they've got to subdivide it. Subdivision under the planning statutes says division of land for sale. Developed. So they need to do these activities. They need to employ the engineer and go forward in trying to develop the property for sale to get to this point where they would have 24 strips of property.
What if it were really demonstrated on the record that no developer would step forward and develop this property and the town would just be stuck with it? Would that change the situation?
That would answer perhaps, try to answer the second prong of this test. There's some kind of need. Well, the need needs to be for a public object that is not being supplied. And the public object, to me, the town can subsidize development if not developing will maintain a public harm. And what I guess I'm saying is the distinction here between increasing tax base is different than protecting jobs from leaving the state.
That's why the statutes that step in to redevelop or allow redevelopment of blighted areas survive.
Right. That's exactly right. It's connected to health concerns. I mean, eliminating blight. And in fact, the developers' agreements that were referred to, Those are TIF districts, and TIF districts are founded on blight findings. Okay, so now if the town goes back in a year from now and says, Heron Bay is blighted, well, then we'll have a factual argument about is it blighted or not, and maybe it'll go to court. But right now they haven't done that.
And a lot of industrial redevelopment is based on TIF financing.
Absolutely, yeah.
On that rationale and would survive a public purpose challenge.
It is. The potential impact in this case, and it may not be a bad one, is that, for instance, in Brookfield, where I'm from, Brookfield Square is going to be a TIF district. Well, this is a high-end neighborhood. It's not blighted. But the idea is, well, we need public dollars to prevent this thing from going downhill, and we need to move forward. Maybe those kinds of findings, those kinds of decisions will say, well, wait a minute, we can't do anything here. I mean, we have to have some kind of public purpose, some kind of obviously public harm that we're trying to remedy, blight or otherwise, before we can put the public monies into that.
Homestead tax credits, if you prevail, what impact do you think this would have on homestead tax credits? Hell, not private individuals pay their tax bills, residential property.
What impact would it have if I prevail on private individuals paying their tax bills in Beloit or just generally? I'm not quite sure.
The state. I mean, is that a public purpose?
Them being required to pay their property tax? Sure. I think that as long as the taxes, I think there's an assumption that, or presumption that taxing the property, that it's going to be used for a public purpose. When the public body, that's the taxing authority, goes beyond that, we have these challenges. So I don't think it's going to affect the power to tax. I think that it's going to affect the specific actions and the expenditure of funds or the appropriation of funds for certain objects that may not be public in nature.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sincotta. Thank you, Mr. Dumont. Thank you, Mr. Forbeck. We haven't had a public purpose case for a while, except for the...